You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
It is the APC podcast, Green Bay Packers talk from AcmePackingCompany.com and SB Nation, still in the throes of training camp, though we're getting ready to come to a close and usher in the regular season real soon. I am Zach Rapport, at Zach Rapport on Twitter. Follow the show at the APC pod, and I am joined today in a very fetching retro Milwaukee Bucks hat and drinking some scotch on camera. Bad audio for those of you not in on our two-person video chat by Tex Western. How are you, man?
It's been a day.
Yeah.
It has been a day. It's been an interesting couple days.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to process a lot of what's been going on, as I'm sure a lot of people out there are.
Yeah.
And trying to come up with ways that I can contribute to good things out there in the world at this point. So yeah. That's where I'm at.
Yeah. Much the same. And as we record this today, as you mentioned today, it is Wednesday, August 26th, and it's about 8:40 PM Eastern time, just to give everyone like freeze frame. That's the moment that we're talking about here, as Tex takes a nice big old sip from that glass. I'm a LaCroix boy today, so keeping it booze free, trying to lean down for training camp. Real actual football is right around the corner. The Packers open their season at Minnesota in a little over 2 weeks, and before that, September 5th at 4 p.m. Eastern next Saturday, as we record this, the Packers must trim their roster down to 53 players. And so ahead, we're going to do a training camp update, sort of focusing on some key groups, some battles. But first, we did want to hit on some newsy type items. Some of them are not good or, complicated, as Tex, as you were alluding to. Firstly, not football, but a lot of moments this year have been bigger than football, and I wanted to touch on quickly and get your take, Tex, on the Milwaukee Bucks players' decision to boycott today's playoff game in response to the recent police shooting in Kenosha, police shooting Jacob Blake 7 times in the back, paralyzing him, protests erupting there. And then today, Illinois teenager showing up to those protests with a gun, killing, I think, 2 people. Just an awful, awful scene. And Tex, to hear the Bucks organization tell it, the players are fed up, man.
Yeah, and this, that team in particular has taken sort of the racial inequality, the police brutality topic very seriously over the last couple of years. With Sterling Brown a couple of years ago, having the situation where, he got into a situation where, he was the victim of some police brutality. I think it's certainly a topic that hits home really closely for the guys on that team, for him in particular. And I think between that, the fact that it's the Bucks and they're, 30 miles north or so of Kenosha, it's very appropriate that they were the team to kind of kick this all off today, with deciding not to play and to do it the way they did and basically, make the decision in the locker room right before tip off to not come out. It certainly brought a lot of attention on the topics that they want to bring attention to. And, I'd say my hat is off, but my hat is on today for the Bucks. So I applaud what they're doing. I applaud the Brewers for kind of standing in solidarity with their, fellow Milwaukee, athletes and with, you know, the communities in Wisconsin, they're going through a lot of really difficult things right now.
Yeah. And our co-host here as well, Ben Foldy, tweeting out at Ben Foldy, a picture of him donning a Bucks jersey today as well in solidarity. It was a wild scene, man. As you alluded to, you know, they were getting ready for tip off and the Bucks just didn't show up and then announced that they were boycotting, the team supports them. And then, you with the hat obviously know more about the NBA than I do. Don't follow it very closely, but did the NBA then cancel the rest of the games for the day?
Yeah, first of all, there was a question about whether or not the Bucks would officially forfeit the game, but then the Magic,
gotcha,
their opponent, you know, officially announced that they would not accept a win by forfeit. So that left the NBA with really the only choice to postpone the game. And yeah, the other two playoff games that were scheduled for this afternoon or this evening, you know, it sounds like the players kind of took the Bucks lead and then the league, you know, followed along as well and postponing all those games.
Yeah. My understanding is that the NBA has been pretty supportive of the players on giving them a lot of latitude to be outspoken about social and racial justice issues facing our country. We've seen a little bit of movement that way now from the NFL to turn it back to football. Tex, do you think that movement is like genuine progress? Do you think it's just a reaction to the moment, or is it just like progress is progress? I don't know. It's messy. What do you think?
Yeah, I think we're going to learn a lot more about just how serious the NFL is about, you know, taking these the players' concerns seriously when the games actually start. You know, if another situation like this happens during the football season, you know, what are players going to do? What is the NFL going to do to either, you know, stand behind and support their players and their expressions and their, you know, them voicing their frustrations? I think that's going to be the really telling factor. Right now, without any preseason games or regular season games yet to, you know, to really have those players get that platform to do something and say something. Yeah, I think we got to wait another couple weeks to really see, you know, where the league is going to fall on this.
Yeah, indeed. Well, a somber and sobering note to sort of start the show, but I definitely felt it was appropriate to touch on it. You know, we stand in solidarity here with the Bucks and to those out protesting in Kenosha, be careful. And yeah, there's no smooth transition, but let's move on to bring it more back into focus with the Packers and football. One more newsy item that I wanted to hit, of course, much less serious. Tex, I wanted to get your take on the new media rules and restrictions handed down by the Packers to the beat reporters, essentially putting a stop to any reporting, tweeting, writing, etc. That my understanding that talks about, you know, which players are taking reps with the ones, the twos, etc. A few other rules too, but I guess the idea being that this reporting could give teams a competitive advantage in terms of, I don't know, like maybe scooping up cut players or something. Tex, it feels to me like the only result here is that fans have less information than they've had in many years coming out of training camp, right?
Yeah, that's pretty much the upshot of this is that, yeah, you and I no longer know if, you know, if a surprising rookie is getting run with the starters or something at this point. And yeah, it's from a fan perspective, it's frustrating because, you know, training camp, especially for the Packers, for you know, this team and this franchise's entire history, it's been one of those great traditions of just openness and the team, you know, opening up practices and the bikes and everything. And I understand that, you know, in the COVID world, a lot of those things have to go away, but you know, it is just frustrating to have a team that for so long has been so open with things to their fans and to their shareholders fundamentally, to just suddenly kind of close things off. And Brian Gutekunst's comments about the rationale for it, I understand it from his, you know, his job as the head personnel guy, trying to put together the best roster he can. I understand where he's coming from on this, that without any preseason games, teams are actually scouring, you know, other teams' beat writers for word on what guys are playing and what units and things. And, you know, okay, there's I guess a little bit of information that you can glean from that. You know, that that certainly in a situation where, you know, guys are putting reps on tape in the preseason, you know, you, that that's not as big a deal, because everybody's kind of on that level playing field. So I get it from Goody's perspective, but I'm still disappointed, and I'm bummed out for the sake of the fans and for all of us that we no longer kind of have that look at this team and how this team is shaping up towards, you know, final cuts next weekend, that we normally would get.
Yeah. And, you know, we at APC rely on a lot of that reporting to give Packers fans the content that they want and I think deserve. Have you seen an impact as the managing editor on like the kind of reporting that we're able to access and what we're able to say?
Yeah. I mean, I was trying to put together a 53-man roster prediction this afternoon, and I'm just thinking to myself, like, you know, I have no idea who's running with the twos on the offensive line, for example. You know, we don't know how a lot of these young players are doing. You see a little bit of, you know, comments here and there if one guy makes a real flashy play, but that's about it. And so, you know, to, you know, is John Runyon, you know, is he playing guard? Is he playing tackle? Is he in the second team? Is he on the third team? We have no clue. And that's, you know, it's a bummer. It makes for, you know, less informed analysis by those who aren't at, you know, at the field for practice and among the, you know, that select group of beat writers. And, you know, it even kind of limits what they can put out as far as their own speculation as well.
Yeah, it's just all around a bummer. And I heard Tom Silverstein on their podcast talking about he was not pulling any punches. He basically said it was ridiculous and stupid. And and that, you know, the fans, it's a publicly owned team. And the fans, you know, the demand for the product is part of the oil that greases the wheels. And they, you know, the fans deserve information. So, it just kind of sucks. But so let's go now into the meat of the show, from talking about how we don't have any information to making predictions and gleaning what we can from what information we do have, and get some training camp updates. We'll talk a little offense, a little defense. But first, I wanted to start again on the offense with some comments that the quarterback Aaron Rodgers made recently. The year is 2010. We're going to set the stage. The year is 2010. Here's a list of some things that happened in 2010. The first iPad was released. Uber, the rideshare app, goes live. Instagram launches in 2010. LeBron James's The Decision happened in 2010. And of course, Packer fans will remember Aaron Rodgers had a pretty good year in 2010. Aaron Rodgers, the quarterback, made mention of spotting something, an undisclosed something, in some 2010 film self-scouting that caused him to, I guess, make some adjustments. And he's been pretty gangbusters in training camp since then. Tex, what's the secret sauce here that he might have uncovered?
Well, I hope whatever it was from the divisional game in Atlanta that he spotted it, because that might be the best single game performance I've ever seen from a quarterback in my life.
There's was Mike Smith the coach of that team?
I think so. Yeah.
There's an NFL films like the Super Bowl, cut up like following the team the whole year, but there's some NFL films footage from that game of Mike Smith on the sideline like halfway through, and he's like, can he throw a fucking incompletion? Because I think he was like, we've talked about it on the show before, I think he threw 5 incompletions the whole game, maybe like almost 40 passes.
It was just absurd. Hopefully it came from that game, but I'm hoping that there's something mechanical that he was able to identify, because the thing with Rodgers these last couple of years that really I've struggled with beyond even just his decision-making is it seems like, you know, his mechanics have always been a little wonky, right? His footwork's always been a little crazy because he's got such a ridiculous arm that he doesn't need to throw from normal platforms that other quarterbacks do. But, you know, maybe there's something in his release or something that he saw because these last 2 years or so on a lot of these short to medium depth routes, his accuracy has just not been what it was. And so I'm hoping that that's something that he was able to spot and that he's having some success, because, you know, he's still as good a deep ball thrower as there is in the NFL. Talked about that in a little bit in a post yesterday on the blog, but yeah, that's my hope, is that there's just some little mechanical tweak, you know, like a pitcher who goes back and watches film of himself, and finds some little, you know, little thing with his delivery. My fingers are crossed that it's something, you know, that simple that, you know, he's realized he used to do and he's not doing it anymore. And now that he's, you know, maybe got that dialed in, that, that maybe that's what it is, and that that can, you know, improve his performance and efficiency a little bit this season.
Yeah. I want to talk for a bit about the role of the quarterback coach. Is it even possible that if it's something mechanical, that it wasn't already pointed out to him by a coach at some point? Am I giving the quarterback coach too much credit?
That's a good question. And honestly, I mean, you know, last year Luke Getsy came back after a couple years at Mississippi State. You know, he was the receivers coach, I think, when he was in Green Bay before, though. So, and I think Getsy was a quarterback himself, and LaFleur being a quarterback, you know, there's a lot of guys who've played that position now on the coaching staff. So, you know, maybe there's something, I don't know, but maybe it's one of those where, you know, the player knows his own tendencies and his own, you know, his own mechanics as well as anybody else. And just the fact that, you know, Rodgers has had several different quarterbacks coaches the last couple of years, who I forget who the guy even was when in McCarthy's last year, like Frank
Cignetti.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, you know, he's had a couple of relatively forgettable guys come through the last, you know, handful of years. And yeah, maybe it's something where, you know, they didn't pick up on something, and Rodgers, with the kind of memory and the analytical mind that he's got, he was able to grab something. That's my hope. You know, he was particularly vague when he was talking about it to not kind of give up whatever it was. So, you know, hopefully we'll just have to see, and hopefully we'll just see it in the results this year.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, it was Frank Cignetti Jr., the name. Right. The only reason I remember that name is because that name is a running joke on the Around the NFL podcast, where they've created this fictional private eye character named Frank Cignetti. Wonderful stuff. All right, let's talk about the offensive line now, Tex, because there seems to be a battle to find the best of a good, not great bunch on the right side of the line. You know, Rick Wagner has missed some time with an arm injury, and so we see Lane Taylor and Billy Turner delivering some positive performances there. What do you make of the competition going on that side of the line, and how optimistic are you that the Packers have who they need to be good there?
Yeah, the first part is easier to answer, right? Is as of right now, I mean, it looks like it's probably going to be Taylor and Turner starting at guard and tackle. Taylor has been apparently lights out in one-on-ones this year. I think he was 8-0 as of yesterday or something in the one-on-one pass rush drills, which is great. And fundamentally, I mean, he was a very good guard for a couple years there. Before last year, when you know, when Elgton Jenkins came and kind of took his job, and then he had the biceps injury and everything. So I think, you know, learning a little more about that injury and just how serious it was, it seems like that was more a case of Jenkins was coming, and Jenkins is really damn good, and he was going to end up starting sooner or later regardless. But you know, not at the it's not like that job was just handed to him because Taylor wasn't playing well. So, you know, I think of those three guys, I think Taylor at right guard is probably your strongest link right now. And then the question is, what do you do at tackle? And certainly Turner's a guy who's played both positions before. And he may kind of end up getting that job by default, just depending on what happens with Wagner's injury. But between those two, you know, I was talking with John Meerdink at Acme Packing Company a little bit today about it, and both of those guys have contracts where you probably have to keep them both this year. For Wagner, you definitely can't release him because his dead cap hit would be, you know, about as much as his cap hit is for this season, so you're not gaining any any cap space anyway. And Turner's kind of in the same boat. So yeah. I think you end up with, you know, day one, it's probably, you know, it's probably Taylor at right guard, Turner at right tackle, with Wagner, if he's healthy, being kind of a backup swing tackle guy, which isn't maybe the worst thing, because then, you know, maybe that makes room for, you know, another younger offensive lineman on the interior, a guy like John Runyon, to kind of step in for, you know, for like an Alex Light, who hasn't particularly impressed so far this season or the last yeah. couple of years. So, but yeah, the versatility certainly is a big factor on that line, between, you know, Turner able to play with different positions, Runyon probably in the same boat. Lucas Patrick can play over the, all over the interior. So the biggest question that I just have is, what does your backup tackle situation look like, especially at left tackle, where, you know, Wagner has played the right side through his entire NFL career. So if Bakhtiari were to go down, that's a major concern. And we kind of had a little, you know, heart in our mouth moment, about a week ago when he left practice and missed a day.
Yeah.
So thankfully he's back there, but, yeah, asking me right now, it's probably Taylor starts and Turner starts next to him. And, you know, we'll just kind of see. Hopefully Wagner can get back on the field and really make it a good competition at tackle again.
Yeah, beyond that, it seems a little muddy. If only the beat writers were allowed to tell us what they were actually seeing on the field. Well, from everyone's like under the radar cut candidate to what you described as the strongest link at right guard, Lane Taylor, man, good on you.
Yeah.
Good on you.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially after taking a pay cut to come back and compete for a job again. You know, that's not an easy thing to do, to swallow a little bit of a pay cut and come back. But yeah, if he pulls it off, I'll look forward to all the stories about him and his smoked meats in the off season again next year.
Oh, big same. All right. Moving on text. Let's move to the defensive side of the ball. Last week, Justice Mosqueda and I talked a bit about inside linebackers and what the Packers were going to do there. They lose Martinez, they gain Kirksey, but other than that, it's kind of just question marks. Well, fast forward a little bit through training camp, and it's fifth round pick Kamal Martin, who appears to be making some waves. Can you talk a bit about what we've seen from him so far in camp? I mean, insofar as a reporter is allowed to talk about him.
Yeah, it at least sounds through various allusions that the beat writers have made that Martin's been getting a lot of run with the ones at that other second linebacker spot next to Kirksey. And I think what you're looking at is probably a two-man competition between Martin and Oren Burks for that spot. It sounds like they really like Ty Summers as a true Mike and is probably the backup to Kirksey. And so Martin, you know, and Burks being, you know, pretty athletic guys in their own right, Burks especially, you know, we don't know what Martin would have done as far as like combine testing and stuff because of his injury. But, you know, it sounds like Martin's been rangy, been doing well in the passing game, looking good in coverage. And that seemed like it was kind of a strength of his at Minnesota. You know, a lot of the highlight cutups that you'd see of him were him making plays in the passing game. Maybe not so much, you know, really stepping up in, you know, into the line and shedding blockers and making, you know, big plays on the running back. So, you know, maybe that does fit well. And I think, you know, you guys talked about it a little bit last week, but I always still wonder about Mike Pettine, and does he play a safety at the linebacker position because he has to or because he wants to? And I still don't know the answer. I think, you know, you need to, if the Packers really have that rangy athletic coverage linebacker, what is he going to do at that spot? You know, we've been seeing Raven Green, you know, before they locked down the media, you know, he was getting run both at some linebacker where he played earlier last year, as well as at deep safety. So it looks like they're kind of going to try to use him all over. So I wouldn't be surprised to certainly still see him in there as a linebacker in, you know, real obvious passing situations, you know, your third and longs and things. But, yeah. You know, the base defense is the question. Because, I mean, Dime was basically the Packers' base last year. So, you know, my fingers are crossed for Martin that he works out. You know, I'm still holding out a little bit of hope for Oren Burks, just given his general, you know, innate athletic ability and you know, he's an easy guy to root for, but, you know, he just hasn't been able to put it all together. And if he really does get passed up by, you know, by a fifth round rookie, you know, this is probably the beginning of the end for him in Green Bay.
Yeah. And you took one of my follow-up questions right out of my mouth. I was going to ask, what impact would a truly trustworthy inside linebacker, you know, combination there have on the guys in the secondary? And it sounds like, just like Justice Mosqueda last week, it's a shrug from you in terms of like not being totally convinced you understand what defensive coordinator Mike Pettine is actually trying to do.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if you've got that linebacker, then you can play, you know, you can play a lot of three safety looks, right? You can put a guy like Darnell Savage in the slot instead of a deep safety, maybe play Raven Green deep. That gives you some interesting abilities. You can, you know, drop Adrian Amos down into the box as a run defender. There's so many different things that you can do if you've got that linebacker and don't have to devote a safety in place so light all over the place. So, I hope that Martin, you know, shows out and looks good and can be effective, because I think that would free up some more options for Pettine on the back end.
Yeah. And this wasn't on our little rundown, but as long as we touch on the secondary there, I wanted to bring up Josh Jackson's name because, mm-hmm. You know, after I would think a pretty disappointing first couple of seasons, not the name I expected to see flying around Twitter from the beat reporters. And yet it seems like he's making a name for himself in this training camp.
Yeah. And I think you're seeing the team finally just let him commit to a single position and probably one of his, you know, his best position, which is outside boundary cornerback, and just play, you know, give him a role that he's played before, that he's comfortable in. And even, you know, Mike Pettine even said it last week that last year they played him at slot and they played him at safety and they kind of played him all over mainly by necessity. And it just didn't really work out for him. So moving back to the outside where he had really good success that one year in college. And I noticed this, you know, a little while ago that the Packers actually moved from one of the most man coverage heavy teams in 2018 to basically middle of the pack in terms of how often they used man coverage versus zone last year. And so if they're using more zone, that probably plays more into Jackson's strengths on the outside. Because he played in a real zone heavy scheme at Iowa, where he had all that success. So, you know, maybe it's a case of, you know, getting back into some concepts he's more comfortable with at a position he's more comfortable with. But yeah, it definitely sounds like he's been having a little bit of a resurgence in camp, and hopefully, you know, he's still a physical guy. He's still a ball hawk. As long as he can, you know, learn to be a little more hands off, I think, you know, he's got a shot at least contributing this year.
Nice. Let's focus on the pass rush here. And APC contributor Ryan, aka Archon, has a piece up on the blog right now, making the case that the Packers' strong pass rush should see sustained success and carryover from last year. Whether it's the Smiths or Kenny Clark, congrats on the contract, by the way, Kenny Clark, Kenny Clark, whether it's the Smiths, Kenny Clark, or even Rashawn Gary, Tex, you know, have we seen evidence in camp that these guys are like ready to pick up where they left off and maybe even take a step forward? Or are you allowed to say? I'm just going to keep driving that joke home.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it looks like, you know, for the Smiths, it's business as usual. You know, both of those guys are you know, appear ready to go. Zadarius thankfully got back on the field this week after missing a couple of days, but Gary certainly is the wild card, right? He's, you know, he's still the young, raw, athletic pass rusher, but it really struck me listening to Mike Smith, the outside linebackers coach, not the same Mike Smith who coached the Falcons in 2010, but he and Gary like have this kind of crazy, you know, really intensely, you know, brotherly relationship where they, you know, both of them used the word love to describe their relationship with the other multiple times last week. And you know, Smith is, he will die on the hill that Rashawn Gary is going to be a great pass rusher in the NFL. And it was kind of fun to see that much passion out of an assistant coach for one of his players. And he kind of brings that to everybody, but he is all in on Rashawn Gary being not just good, but great, by the time his career is over. And so, you know, you hate to pull one of those best shape of his life, you know, tropes out, especially in a guy's second year, but you know, everybody was saying he looks leaner. He looks a little more explosive. And all the coaches have raved about, you know, how well he prepared himself and his body over the offseason, you know, outside the building. So it sounds like he's done everything he can to put himself in a position to really be a quality number three. And they're going to give him a lot of opportunities to do that. But yeah, as far as the pass rush group as a whole, Smith was funny too, because he went on about a 3-minute rant about how judging a pass rusher based on his sacks is a crappy way to judge a guy, and you need to look at their pressures and their rate of pressure. And that's one area where, you know, both of the Smiths did really well last year. Clark did well. You know, Gary did pretty good in limited action. And so, you know, if you're affecting the quarterback, that's what Smith wants to see. And, yep. And that's kind of what Archon was getting at in his article today is, you know, a lot of these guys, the pressure rates have been very high. And even for most of them, the you know, the number of sacks they got relative to the number of pressures they had are pretty sustainable numbers. Unlike, say, Kyler Fackrell 2 years ago, where he very strongly overperformed to get that, you know, 10 sacks against just like, you know, 15 or 16 pressures. That's just right. not a sustainable rate. So, yeah, that's kind of where he was getting at, that, you know, the sack rate should be able to maintain based on, you know, these guys' ability to get pressure on the quarterback. And, you know, that's going to be a huge thing for this team, because obviously they relied on that pass rush a ton last year, and keeping those guys healthy and fresh and rotated through, you know, that should keep that unit productive.
Yeah. Awesome. I'm looking forward to seeing how they shape up here as the Packers get ready to start the season in a couple weeks. One more thing before we get out of here. Wanted to just turn to Twitter really quickly. Firstly, because PJ asked us so nicely. Here you go. Here you go, PJ.
Big f***ing Bob.
I missed my opportunity in real time to play the Big Bob drop last week because I didn't have my head in the game. It is simultaneously my favorite thing that I've ever created and the dumbest thing I've ever created. So, but on a serious note, Ben Saylor tweets in with a question, so I thought I would leave us with this text. He wonders, what are Begelton's odds of making the roster? Early hype sounds positive.
Yeah, I was trying to go through a 53-man prediction today, and I couldn't find a spot for him. I was trying. I was legitimately trying to see if I could find a way that the Packers can feasibly keep six wide receivers. But I think based on keeping three quarterbacks, probably four running backs, between Jones, Jamal Williams, Dillon, and Tyler Irvin, I just don't see, you know, a space for a fifth receiver or for a sixth receiver, excuse me. And unfortunately, you know, it seems like the top five are pretty well set.
Yeah.
So I think you look at him probably as your number one guy off the practice squad, which I think that's going to be a really interesting thing to follow this year, because I doubt that teams are going to be poaching practice squad players or final cuts as much as they have in years past, just because of the COVID situation and how difficult it is to get guys into the building, you know, from signing them or claiming them off of waivers or what have you. So, right now I don't think he's done enough to supplant a guy like Jay Kumerow as the number five, especially because the Packers love his willingness to block in the run game. So, you know, I like Begelton. I think he brings a different skill set to what the Packers have with the rest of the receivers on the roster. And I think, you know, there's a good chance that he could end up contributing to this team at some point in 2020. I just don't see it happening in week one.
Yeah. And luckily for Packers fans, you know, the opposing teams won't have that much intel on Begelton thanks to the Packers' new media policy. All right. All right. Well, with that, I think that we are going to hit the polka. and just call it a day. That's going to do it for us this week. Thank you, Tex, for joining us. Guys, please consider giving us a rating in Apple Podcasts. A positive rating helps us reach more people, and it makes us feel good, too. We read them all, and I share them, especially when they're nice and when they're bad, too. If Patreon is your thing, you can support us there, patreon.com/notenugs. Every dollar helps us keep up with equipment costs and gear upgrades and other resources to help us bring you this show, patreon.com/notenugs, N-O-T-E-N-U-G-S. A huge thank you to all of our patrons. Football is right around the corner. I'm working with Ben and Alex to get our regularly scheduled shenanigans back online. We got some fun things in the works for you guys this season, so get excited. In the meantime, Tex, thank you for joining us on such short notice, man. You have any parting words here for Packers fans?
No. If drinking's your thing, just try to have a drink, relax, and we'll hopefully try to all work through everything that's going on together, and go Pack, go.
Damn straight. All right, everybody. Keep your stick on the ice. Later.
More to-dos, less time, and an infinite number of tools to keep track of. Sometimes doing business has never felt harder, but you don't need a miracle to hit your goals. You can just use HubSpot, because their all-in-one customer platform can make growing your business infinitely easier. Imagine this: high-quality leads, fast closing deals, wildly happy customers, and more benchmark-breaking quarters. It's not a miracle, it's HubSpot. Visit HubSpot.com to get started today.